In our previous sermon, we have examined the book of Daniel, and we also introduced the book of Revelation. We saw that Revelation 13 reveals the information about the beast and the image of the beast. Now, real quickly, let's look at some of the things that we've learned. In Daniel chapter 2, we had the golden, image that King Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, dreamed about. And you remember it had the head of gold representing the Babylonians. It had the Medes and the Persians represented by the chest and arms of silver. Medes and Persians, two arms, the right and the left. The Greeks were represented by the brass or the bronze midsection and the belly and the thighs. And the Roman Empire was the legs of iron. And the revived United States of Europe will be the 10 toes. And we had two divisions of the Roman Empire, as there are two divisions to the human body and the legs. There's a right leg and the left leg. Now in Daniel 7, which we looked at a couple of months back in one of our sermons, Babylon was represented by the lion with that stood on 2 feet with a man's heart. You remember there were four beasts that came up out of the sea. Daniel had a vision on his bed, probably some kind of dream, and he saw four beasts coming up out of the sea. The first one was the lion representing the Babylonians, and a man's heart was given to it, and it was made to stand on 2 feet like a man. You remember King Nebuchadnezzar went insane for a while, and he wandered the palace grounds as a beast, and then his senses came back to him, and he stood back up on 2 feet. The lion, obviously, in this scenario, representing him and his madness and his kingdom. Then we had the Medes and the Persians, a bear on one side, and it had three ribs in its mouth, which were the three kingdoms that the Medes and the Persians conquered before they became a world-ruling kingdom. And then we had the Greeks, symbolized by a leopard with four heads, very fast leopard, because this leopard had wings with it, or on it. And then we had the Roman kingdom, and there was a great dreadful beast, iron teeth, brass claws, and it had a little horn. And a little horn came up among the 10 horns and cast down 7 of the horns. In Daniel 8, we looked specifically at 2 kingdoms, the Medes and the Persians. The Medes and the Persians, and the Greeks, were represented by the two-horned ram. The two-horned ram represented the Medo-Persian Empire. They ruled jointly, the Medes and the Persians. And they were represented by the ram, had 2 horns. Second horn came up last, but it dominated the kingdom. It came up higher. So that was the animal that represented the Medo-Persians. The Greeks were represented by the billy goat or the he-goat that had one great notable horn, and represented the first king, Alexander the Great. And Alexander the Great died, as we learned, and 4 horns came up in its place, representing the 4 generals and the 4 areas that they ruled after the death of Alexander the Great. We overviewed the book of Revelation, and we found out that Revelation is a book of revealing. It's not a book that was given to the saints to hide meanings. It was a book given to the saints to reveal things. And most of your Protestants believe that Revelation is hidden and sealed and all of that because they don't understand it. And the reason they don't understand it is 2 reasons. One is they don't have the testimony of Jesus Christ and the spirit of prophecy, which is based on commandment keeping, and they don't have the Holy Spirit. So they don't understand that Revelation is a book based on revealing. Another thing we learned about Revelation when we overviewed Revelation was that Revelation, many of its events took place on the day of the Lord. And the theme of the book of Revelation was the day of the Lord. Last time we had a sermon on prophecy, which was our 6th sermon in our series. This will be our 7th. Last time we had a sermon on Revelation 13, and we learned about the beast with the 7 heads and the 10 horns. And we learned that the beast was the Roman Empire, and that the Roman Empire persecuted the Christians of the empire because the Roman Empire was based on emperor worship, and they considered the emperors divine and the gods. And so if you were a subject of Rome, as many of the Christians were, lived in Rome, then you had to offer offerings and incense at various times to the state gods, which included the emperor. Most Christians would not do this. So they were persecuted. Now, this was not the church persecuting the Christians, but this was the Roman Empire persecuting the Christians. Then we read about a dragon, lamb beast, and it said, let's make a copy of the Roman Empire. Let's make a copy of the beast. And the copy of the beast was a great false church, sometimes called the Holy Roman Catholic Church. Roman because it had many attributes of the Roman Empire. And the great false church, the universal church, Catholic means universal, the great false universal church persecuted the Christians. It had a number and it had a mark that was placed on Christians. And we examined all of that. So as a form of review, we are now, that's what we have covered in the last six sermons. We're now in our seventh sermon. This one is going to cover the chapter 17 in the book of Revelation. In this chapter, Revelation 17, there's a scarlet colored woman who rides a beast. And so what we're going to do is we're going to look at this woman, we're going to look at the beast she rides, and we're going to come to some understanding of what the Bible is trying to tell us. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to, as we have done in other sermons, is we're just going to overview what Revelation 17 says. So if you'll turn to your last book in the Bible, and you'll turn to almost one of the chapters in the very end of Revelation, Revelation 17, we're going to examine it and read it. Now we're just going to read it, a few comments, but we need to find out and we need to look at what exactly is going on in Revelation 17. After we finish reading it, we'll come back and we will look at what some of these symbols mean. Verse 1, then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and talked with me. Now remember we had the seven seals, and then the seventh seal was the seven trumpets, and the seventh trumpet was made up of the seven last plagues. The plagues were in bowls. So this angel was one of the angels that was involved in pouring out the plagues, the seven last plagues. He had the seven bowls. He came and talked with me, saying to me, come, and I will show you the judgment of the great whore who sits on many waters. So there was this prostitute, and the prostitute was sitting on many waters. And we don't have to interpret what the waters are. It'll be interpreted for us later. Verse 2, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth were made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So we have the kings of the earth involved in harlotry with this woman, whoever or whatever she represents. Verse 3, so he carried me away in the spirit, this is a vision, into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast. Now, if you are a person sitting on a beast, for example, a horse, that means you control the beast. And so this woman controls this beast, whatever it is. This woman was a prostitute. She was a harlot, a woman of ill repute. So he carried me, verse 3, away into the spirit, into the wilderness, and I saw a woman on a scarlet beast, which was full of the names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. Now, if you'll remember some of the other beasts we examined, they had heads and horns and all of this. This beast has seven heads and ten horns. And we're going to see what they mean later on. The woman was very, 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 very richly dressed. She was arrayed in purple and scarlet. These are colors of royalty and of power. She was arrayed in purple and scarlet and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, having in her hand a golden cup full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. So she was a filthy woman. She was involved in evil, shameful things, represented by this cup that she had from which she was drinking. And on her forehead a name written. Now, if you're familiar with Roman prostitutes, the Roman prostitutes had a band on their head with their name on it. So that, straight to the point here. They had a name on them so that you could dispense with the formalities. So their prostitutes had a band on their head, all of them, the Roman prostitutes, with a name on it. This woman also has a name, which further identifies her as a prostitute or a harlot. Her name is Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. Now you remember in Daniel chapter 2, we had the king Nebuchadnezzar who dreamed a dream, and his head, he was the head of the image, and the image was Babylon. And then we had the various other parts of the body, and then there was the 10 toes. And the 10 toes, the stone hit the 10 toes and destroyed the image. Well, the image is still alive and well until the toes are destroyed. Because it doesn't, you know, the stone didn't hit the head, didn't hit the middle section or the legs. The stone in Daniel chapter 2 hits the toes, the feet. And the toes and the feet haven't come to power yet. So this is Babylon. We are involved here in a woman that represents Babylon the Great. Now notice that she is a harlot, but she is also the mother of harlots. So from her have come harlot daughters. She has showed these daughters her trade. And so not only is she a harlot, but she has daughters that are harlots. And of the abominations of the earth. So she's done a lot of abominable things. I saw the woman, and she was drunk with the blood of the saints. The saints are the people of God. And with the blood of the martyrs. Martyrs is someone who dies for their religion. Blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I marveled with great amazement. So what John sees in a vision, he sees a woman. And she is a harlot. She has a band on her forehead that identifies her as Babylon Mystery the Great. Mystery Babylon the Great. This woman is very richly dressed. She's dressed in royalty. She's got all kinds of beautiful robes on. She's got a golden cup from which she's drinking. And the golden cup has the abominations of the earth. And it has the blood of the martyrs and the blood of God's people in it. She is riding a beast. There's no animalistic comparisons to this beast. It's not like a leopard or a lion. It doesn't say. She's riding a beast. That's awesome. John says when he saw this beast, he marveled. And so the woman who has got a cup full of the blood of the martyrs of Christ, this woman rides this beast and controls the beast. So we have this woman who is controlling this beast, whatever it is. This beast has 7 heads and 10 horns. Verse 6, last part. When I saw her, I marveled with great amazement. Like, whoa, look at this. What does all of this mean? Verse 7. But the angel, the one that was involved in the 7 last plague, said to me, why did you marvel? I will tell you the mystery, or as it says in the margin, the hidden truth of the woman and of the beast that carries her, which has 7 heads and 10 horns. So this angel is going to give us the interpretation of what this woman is, what the beast is, and the horns and all of this. We don't have to interpret it, we just have to keep reading. Verse 8, the beast that you saw was and is not, and will ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. Perdition means destruction, or the lake of fire. And those who dwell on the earth will marvel whose names are not written in the book of life. If your name is not written in the book of life, that means you're not a saint. If your name is written in the book of life, you're a saint. So those that don't know the truth are going to marvel when this woman appears, whose names are not written in the book of life, verse 8, middle part, from the foundation of the world, when they see the beast that was and is not and yet is. So this beast didn't exist, now exists, and now is. So it's a very interesting beast. Here is a mind which has wisdom. The 7 heads are 7 mountains. So this beast, the 7 heads on the beast represent 7 mountains on which the woman sits. So this woman controls 7 mountains, and she sits on 7 mountains. The beast is another way of representing the 7 mountains are the kingdoms that this woman rides on. 5 have fallen, 1 is, and the other has not yet come. Now, if you have 7 presidents that are going to rule, and I tell you from some point in the future. Five presidents have already ruled. There's one that's ruling now, which is the sixth, because the one plus five is six. And there's one that's going to come after him. That pretty much puts you in a certain point in time, right? Five have come. Five presidents have already come and been elected and, you know, have gone out of power. There's one that is the president now, and there's one more to follow. So when we understand what's going on here, and we'll see this later, where it says here in verse 10, there also are seven kings. Five have fallen. One is, and the other has not yet come. So John is seeing this vision at a particular point in time. When five of the kings have fallen, there's one, the sixth one, that's in power right now, and there's going to be another one that's going to come later. So we can figure out what these seven kingdoms are. We know that John was seeing this vision in the reign of the sixth kingdom. All right? And we're going to do that in a minute. And when he comes, the seventh one, notice verse 10, one is and the other has not come. And when he, the one that hasn't come yet, comes, he's going to continue for a short time. So the seventh mountain, the seventh kingdom, the seventh head that the woman sits on, all the same thing. That head's only going to be around for a little while. The beast that was and is not is himself also the eighth and is of the seventh and going to perdition. He's like the seven, but he's almost different. So we're going to make him like the eighth, but he's actually one of the seven. So he was the seventh, but he's a little bit different is what it's saying. Verse 12. Now, before we go to verse 12, verse 10 talks about the seven heads. It says that the seven heads are seven kings or seven mountains. So the seven heads are successive because five are fallen, one exists now, and one is coming later. So these seven heads follow in history one after the other. All right? Now, this is different than the ten horns in verse 12. The ten horns which you saw are ten kings who have received no kingdom yet. So at the rule of the sixth head, there still wasn't the ten horns in sight. They still hadn't come to power. So we know that the ten horns are sometime after the reign of the sixth king, because they didn't exist yet. The ten horns, which you saw, verse 12, are ten kings who have received no kingdom as yet, but they receive authority for 1 hour as kings with the beast. So the beast is going to have, one of the revivals is going to have ten horns. Now, if five heads are fallen, and one is, and one is to come, and each one of those is a king, and the ten horns haven't come yet, but they allied with one of the kings, then the ten horns are going to be allied with the seventh horn. With the seventh head. Let me repeat that again. It's very important that you understand that. There are five kingdoms that are fallen. There is one that exists now as John was seeing this vision. One more is coming in the future, and when that one more king comes, which represents the beast, he's only going to be around for a short while. Now, let's go to the ten horns, John says. The ten horns are going to only exist for a little while, and they don't exist yet. So that means in the rule of the sixth horn, or sixth head, or the sixth king, the ten horns hadn't come to power yet. If they're going to be allied with one of the kings or one of the heads, then it has to be with the seventh head. So the ten horns actually belong on the seventh head. And they're going to rule as 1 hour as kings with the beast, which means that the ten horns are contemporary. They all exist at the same time because they're going to be on the head of the seventh head. Verse 13 kind of expounds on this. They are of one mind, the ten horns, and they will give their power and authority to the beast. Is there anywhere in any of the prophecy sermons we've given where we look at ten somethings that are destroyed by Christ, and they all exist at the same time? Yes, in Daniel chapter 2, we had the 10 toes. So the 10 horns here are the same as the 10 toes of Daniel chapter 2. And that's verified if you look at your chart. Verse 13, these are of one mind, and they will give their power and authority to the beast. Now notice verse 14. These are still talking about the 10 horns on the seventh head. So the seventh kingdom, or the seventh mountain, or the seventh head, which has the 10 horns, which are 10 kings allied with that king, they are going to make war with the Lamb. And the Lamb will overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings. Now, if these are earthly kingdoms, then we're talking about them being destroyed when Christ returns. We've read of many, many places about Christ returning and about him setting up a kingdom. You remember in Daniel chapter 2, the stone hit the toes. And what happened to the stone? It became a mountain that filled the whole earth. So that's the return of Jesus Christ. So this seventh head with the 10 horns are going to somehow be destroyed when Christ returns. Let me read verse 13 again. They are of one mind, and they will give their power and authority to the beast. These will make war with the Lamb. The Lamb will overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings. And those who are with him, who's those that are returning with Christ when he returns? The saints. Those that are with him are called, chosen, and faithful. Verse 15. The woman is sitting on many waters, right? What are the waters? Then he said to me, the waters which you saw where the harlot sits are peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues. I think one of the words in there is ethnos, which means ethnicity or races. So we have the different nations, the different races, the different people. I mean, everybody is under this woman because she is sitting on many, many waters. Verse 16, and the 10 horns which you saw on the beast, these will hate the harlot. Now the harlot, whatever the harlot is, and we're going to look at that in a minute, the 10 horns on the final seventh head of the beast that's being ridden by the woman, this seventh head and the 10 horns on it are going to turn against the woman. You ever been on a horse and the horse didn't want to be ridden? You end up on the ground, maybe stomped on or bitten. That's what's happening here. This beast is going to cast off the woman. It says here in verse 16, and the 10 horns which you saw on the beast on the seventh head, these will hate the harlot, make her desolate and naked, eat her flesh and burn her with fire. Verse 17, for God has put it into their hearts to fulfill his purpose. Nothing, brethren, happens without God knowing. All of these beasts, all of these horns, all of these kings, all of these animals, all of these symbols that we're seeing are being orchestrated by God. He's allowing them to happen. Okay? He's allowing them to happen. For God has put it into their hearts to fulfill his purpose, to be of one mind and to give their kingdom to the beast until the words of God are fulfilled. It gives us a hint here about the woman. The scarlet woman, the woman that's a harlot riding the scarlet beast. Here's a hint about her. And the woman which you saw is that great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. So this woman is a great city. So the woman is a city. And so this harlot is symbolized by a city. And this city reigns over the kings of the earth. So this means this is a real city because it's reigning over the kings of the earth. Kings of the earth is not symbolic. There are kings of the earth, and this woman is reigning over them. Now, let's look at some things. The first thing you have to understand, if you have not guessed it by now, and this is my first point, is that the woman riding the beast is a great false universal church known by the name the Holy Roman Catholic Church. So this woman is the great false church. Now, let's consider some things that's going to prove this. Notice Revelation 17, Revelation 18, that chapter, Revelation 19, all talks about, in some way or another, about Babylon. And in Revelation 17, we have Mystery Babylon the Great. In Revelation 18, we have the fall of Babylon the Great. If you want to know what happens to the harlot in Revelation 17, read Revelation 18. And then in Revelation 19, we have heaven rejoicing because Babylon has fallen. What happens in Revelation 19? In Revelation 19, Jesus Christ returns. So Jesus Christ returns at the time that the Babylonian head exists at the time of the end, because it is destroyed by Christ. So the context of Revelation 17, 18, and 19, those chapters, show that Babylon the Great will exist up until the time Christ returns. And in Revelation 18 and last part of Revelation 17, Christ destroys Babylon the Great, or the great false church. All right? Now, let's look at when this happens. Keep your place here in Revelation. We're going to be coming back. Let's go to Jeremiah chapter 51. Jeremiah 51. Jeremiah 51. In Jeremiah 51, mine has a heading on this chapter. Look at the heading you have probably. You have a New King James. Mine says the destruction of Babylon. Now we read in Revelation 17, 18, and 19 about Babylon and it being destroyed. Notice here in chapter 51 of Jeremiah, verse 6. Flee from the midst of Babylon, and everyone save his life. Do not be cut off in her iniquity, for this is a time of the Lord's vengeance. He will recompass her. And it talks here about what is going to happen to Babylon. You can read about it in Revelation chapter 51. And the context of Revelation chapter 51 is the day of the Lord. For this is a time of the Lord's vengeance. You remember we talked about the day of the Lord in one of our past sermons? And also Mr. Moody a few sermons ago talked about the day of the Lord. And the day of the Lord, which is a theme of the book of Revelation, the day of the Lord is the time that God begins to personally interact with humanity through the various things that go on in the book of Revelation. Now let's go back to Revelation 17, showing you, we're looking at the proof that this is a great false church. Some people, the Catholics who read this, you might say, well, what are the Catholics who read this? What do they think? The Catholics who read this think that this applies to ancient Rome. To ancient Rome. But it really applies to the great false church that was modeled after Rome. And I'll show you that. Revelation 17, verse 1 and 2. Notice that she controls the political systems of the world. Verse 7, verse 1, last part, who sits on many waters. What were the waters in verse 15? Peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues. So you could rephrase verse 1 to read, I will show you the judgment of the great harlot who controls peoples, nations, multitudes, tongues, races, and people of different ethnicity. Everybody is controlled by this woman. Notice verse 2. With whom the kings of the earth committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth were made drunk with the wine of her fornication. If you examine the rule of the various kings of Europe during the time that the great false church was alive and well in Europe, and it still is, you will see that the great false church controlled who was made king. Many of the emperors of Rome were crowned by the Pope. Literally, the Pope put the crown on them, including Napoleon and various others. And so we see here that where it says, with the kings of the earth, they have committed fornication. This is talking about the great false church being involved politically with the rulers of Europe during the time that this is talking about. And we'll see about the time period in a minute. The Church of God is very apolitical, which means we don't involve ourselves in politics. And the reason we don't is because God either puts into place or allows to be put into place people that are going to fulfill his prophetic purpose. And let me give you some advice, brethren. You're worried about who's going to get elected? And you're worried about, well, this candidate is better than that candidate? God is going to control or allow who's going to get elected to get elected. And we're living in the time of the end, brethren. And the time of the end is going to be a very difficult time. And if you're waiting for a very conservative, God-fearing person who's going to make everything right to get elected, or you want that to happen, you don't understand prophecy. Because that's not what the Bible says is going to happen. And if that happens, we don't understand prophecy. We don't understand what's going on. What the Bible indicates is that morality and society are going to get worse and worse. So we have to have rulers that are going to implement those laws. That should give you a hint about what kind of people are going to get elected in the future. And in verse 2, it says here that this great church was involved politically with the kings of the earth. Manipulated things. All right, now, let's consider Revelation chapter, this is all in 17. Let's look at verse 5. This mother church, Mystery Babylon the Great, which is another way of saying that this is a great false church. Is there a lot of religions that have come out in protest out of the great false church? Sure are. Do these Protestant daughters keep Babylonian traditions alive and well in their churches? Well, do they keep Christmas? Do they keep Easter? Do they keep the Trinity? Do they accept the long-haired Jesus that's effeminate and is going to rule in heaven? And do they negate the resurrection? Do they believe in the immortality of the soul? All of those are Babylonian doctrines. So another proof that this is a great false church is that the great false church has many daughters. And daughters that are also harlots because they're preaching and they're, they're following in the footsteps of their mother with their doctrines and their lives. So another proof that this is a great false church is many smaller daughter churches with the same doctrines have come out of the great false church. So this is another proof. Verse 4. This woman is prosperous. She's arrayed in purple and scarlet. She's dressed in wealth. Can you imagine what would happen if the great false church sold all of the pieces of art that are in the various cathedrals that she owns? If she were to sell all of the portraits and the sculptures that were produced by Michelangelo, can you imagine the wealth that that would bring in? And the property that she owns and all of those things? This is a very, very wealthy church. So once again, this proves that this is the great false church. Notice one of the best proofs is verse 9. Now, this woman was riding a beast, and the beast had seven heads. Now, notice in 9, here's a mind which has wisdom. And by the way, what does the Bible say wisdom is? Wisdom is the fear of the Lord. Not wisdom is I'm going to try to do maybe what God tells me, or wisdom is not I have good intentions about obeying. No, that's not what wisdom is. Wisdom is the fear of the Lord, which means you're going to obey him. Here is a mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains. And we've learned in other places that a mountain is a kingdom. So the seven heads are seven kings, which are seven mountains. And the woman sits on which the woman sits. Now, have you ever looked at Rome? Take a geography lesson. Go to the internet and click Rome and see what it says about Rome. Rome is built on seven hills. One of them is Vatican Hill. Rome is literally, the city Rome is built on seven hills. Now, people will say, well, yeah, but there's a lot of other cities built on seven hills. For example, Rio de Janeiro. Yeah, but Rio de Janeiro has never ruled over all the world. The city that sits on seven hills has controlled all the world, as it still does now, with its large population of adherents. A lot of your Christian members are members of the Great False Church. So one of the proofs is that this woman sits on seven hills. And what does it say in verse 18 that this woman is? A great city. Now, some of the Catholics will say, well, this is referring to Jerusalem or to Babylon. Well, Jerusalem and Babylon didn't sit on seven hills, although they did exert control over large parts of the world. So we need to look for a woman that's a great false church that has a location of a city that sits on seven hills. Pretty obvious we're talking about the church that sits in Rome. So that's another reason this is the great false church. She sits on seven mountains. Now remember, the seven-headed beast is represented by seven kings. And the seven kings are seven mountains on which the woman sits. So remember, head, mountain, king, they're all the same in this chapter. The seven heads equals seven mountains equals seven kings. And the woman, which is a city, sits on these seven kings or seven mountains. So the city of Rome literally sits on seven mountains, and the city of Rome has actually controlled seven kingdoms. Five of the kingdoms have come. One of them is alive right now, and there's another one of these seven heads that's coming later. So we've identified that these seven heads are controlled by the church. So what we need to do to identify the seven heads is simply look in history and see what seven kings or kingdoms the great false church has controlled. Actually, six, because one hasn't been controlled yet. It's coming in the future. And then we're going to do that later on. Notice that the Bible talks about two churches, brethren, in the scriptures. One is this great false church called Babylon, called Mystery Babylon, called Babylon the Great. She's mentioned in various places in Jeremiah. We went to one of them in Jeremiah 51. And this is a great false church that leads the world astray. There's also another church that's mentioned. This church is mentioned in Revelation 19. Verse 7. Let us be glad and rejoice and give him glory, for the marriage of the Lamb has come, and his wife has made herself ready. And to her it was granted to be arrayed in fine linen, clean and bright. The saints of God, the church, are dressed in virginal white linen. The great false church is dressed in scarlet, which is another way of saying red, and covered with the shame of the abomination she's committed. Those are the two churches, brethren, talked about in the scriptures. We can go to Revelation 12. We're not going there. It talks about the church of Christ. In Ephesians, it talks about God's church. In all these places, she's a virgin who is espoused to her husband and waiting faithfully for him to arrive. So we have two churches. And in Revelation 17, we have a great false fallen church who has gotten into bed with all of the politicians of Europe down through the ages. The kings, the emperors, the dukes, and various other people that had political intercourse with, no pun intended, with Rome. And just read about the history of the great false church during the Middle Ages. Notice verse 6. I saw the woman. So whatever this woman is, which is a city that's on seven hills, which is fornicated with the rulers of Europe, whatever this woman is, notice that she is drunk with the blood of the saints. Did the great false church ever martyr and kill saints during the Middle Ages? Not going to give you the gory details, but historians estimate about 6 or 7 million people were murdered during the Spanish Inquisition and the various cleansing programs that the church went through. The Albigensians, the Waldensians, various religious sects based on biblical principles were nearly exterminated by the Catholic Church. And what they would do is they would imprison you. And once you were in prison or whatever, they would confiscate your territory. They would confiscate your possessions. So if you were the wife of someone who had been arrested, you became homeless because the Catholic Church confiscated all of the possessions that you owned. So imagine all of these millions of people who were martyred, tortured, and killed, and their possessions taken from them. You remember a few years ago, one of the popes apologized for various sins of the church. And one of the things they apologized for was how they had treated Christians. Well, I've always been taught that if you're going to apologize for robbing somebody, one of the things you need to do is return what you've robbed, is it not? Ask yourself a question. Why doesn't the great false church, who robbed all these people, return all of the items they've robbed? They have written records of every heretic that they imprisoned and all the property that they took. And the answer is obvious, brethren. We're dealing with something that's satanic. And the great false church here, in verse 6, martyred the saints. Millions of them. And I'm going to spare you the gory details. Get a hold of Fox's Book of Martyrs. Or read a couple of the chapters in Haley's Bible Handbook. And you will be astounded at what you find. And this is historical records. This is not, you know, stuff that the Church of God put out. This is historical records written by historians. So let's look at some historical clues, brethren. Let's kind of summarize some of them that proves that this is a great false church. What great church has been associated with the revivals of the Roman Empire? What great church has changed the Sabbath from Saturday to Sunday? What great church has persecuted and martyred those who kept the Sabbath, the holy days, and the other laws of God? What great church has adopted pagan holidays and customs, many of them Babylonian, and incorporated them into its worship? What great church has daughters that have come out of her in protest and keep the same customs and days as the mother church? What great church has influenced the history of Europe and has influence over the kings and the emperors of Europe? What great church is associated with the city of Rome? What great church is built on a city that is surrounded by seven hills? Brethren, the answer is very obvious. In Revelation 17, we are dealing with a great false church. Now, that is the woman. The great false church is the woman... The harlot woman that is going to be destroyed in Revelation 19 when Jesus Christ returns. Also is talked about in Revelation 18. Notice verse 2 of Revelation 18. And he cried mightily with a loud voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen. In Revelation 17 verse 5, mystery Babylon the great. So in Revelation 17, we have Mystery Babylon the Great. In Revelation 18, Mystery Babylon the Great falls. And you can read about what happens to the great false church in Revelation 18 if you want to know. Next question. The first point is that the false church is the woman arrayed in scarlet. The second point is who or what is the beast? What is this thing that she's riding? What does it represent? We kind of covered this a little bit, but the woman in verse 3, Revelation again, verse 3, scarlet beast having 7 heads and 10 horns. So we have this church that's riding this beast with seven heads and ten horns. Now, when we look at verse 8, the beast that you saw was and is not, and will ascend out of the bottomless pit. Do you remember when we studied before in Revelation 13, we studied about the beast that had been wounded and that the wound was healed? So the beast was, then it ceased to exist, and now it exists again. That's another way of talking about the fact that the Roman Empire existed. It was overrun by the barbarians, and then it came back into power during the time of Justinian's imperial restoration. It's another way of saying the same thing. Now, notice verse 9. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. There are also seven kings. So seven mountains, seven heads, seven kings, same thing. Once again, five of the kings have fallen, or five of the kings have come and gone. There's one that is existing right now, and there's another one that's going to come later. Now, if you know that there's seven revivals coming, and you know that the first five were controlled by the Catholic Church, and there's one being controlled by them now, you can pinpoint when this vision, the time period of the vision. Are everybody with me? Now, I want you to consider something. The Church of God, under the influence of Mr. Armstrong, began to understand that Revelation 17 was talking about the great false church, and that the seven heads were seven revivals that were in succession. All right, a lot of people think that the seven heads are seven revivals that are past, but they're actually seven revivals. There are five that have passed, one is, and one is to come. Now, if we can date the sixth revival, we know when that revival takes place. Well, Mr. Armstrong began to understand Revelation 17 and the time period of the sixth revival. So he was actually looking back into history through the eyes of John and saying, yes, five of them have fallen. There's one that exists right now as I'm coming to understand this, and there's another one that's going to come in the future. This is talking about a specific time period. And John wrote about this specific time period, and the understanding for this prophecy was revealed to Mr. Armstrong during the time of the sixth king. And we'll see that in a minute. So that's why it's very important, that scripture is very important, because it dates the prophecy. It also tells you that the five kings, the five mountains, the five heads are not all at the same time. Five have fallen. One is, and there's another one in the future. So they're not contemporary. So this is the revivals of the Roman Empire. Let's look at the first five revivals that have come and gone. The first one was Justinian's imperial restoration. If you have your chart there, you can see that the first one that the woman rides is the imperial restoration of Justinian, the beast that was not, that is, and that, you know, as it says, I'm sorry, let me rephrase that correctly. It says, the beast that was, that is not, and yet is. Justinian restored the empire. Look on your Gentile charts, the one that's got all the columns. And look, find yourself there, the column that talks about, let me get to mine, which is in my Bible. Look at the one that talks about the scarlet woman who rides the beast under Revelation 17. The first head is what? She rides seven heads, right? The beast has got seven heads. Five of them have fallen. So we're going to look at the first five because those are fallen. The first beast is Justinian's imperial restoration. The second is a kingdom controlled by Charlemagne, or Charles the Great, or Charles the First, depending on how you look at him in history. He was a king of the Frankish kingdom, late 700s. Then we have the kingdom of Otto the Great, or Otto the First. That was the German kingdom. There's three that have come so far. The fourth is the Habsburg dynasty of Charles V. Now, I have Charles the Great in the chart. It's a typo, but it should be Charles V. And he was crowned in 1530. And then the fifth one is Napoleon's kingdom. He was crowned in 1805. He lost the final battle in 1814. And so what we have is we have the first five kingdoms that have fallen. The first five kingdoms that have fallen, or the first five kings that have come and gone, is Justinian's kingdom, his rule of Rome, the revival of the Roman kingdom under Charles the Great, the second one. The third one was a revival of the Roman kingdom under Otto the Great. The fourth one was a revival of the Habsburg dynasty with Charles V. And the fifth one was Napoleon's kingdom when he was crowned in about the 1800s. You know who crowned Napoleon? The Pope. Pope traveled several weeks to crown Napoleon. And then Napoleon crowned his wife with a crown. Now, there was a sixth revival. This was during World War II under Garibaldi. The Nazis were going to try to take this revival and make it the Third Reich, but they didn't because of the entrance of the Allies into the war. So during the time right before World War II, about the 33s, 34s, 35s, is when this prophecy dates itself. You understand what I'm saying? In other words, if five kings have fallen and one is right now, and the one is that's right now is the sixth one, then this John saw this prophecy as it was occurring in the 1930s, 1940s. That was when Mr. Armstrong began to understand about prophecy. Same time period. Now it says that there's one that's coming, isn't there? There's going to be another one that comes because there's seven heads. The coming one is the United States of Europe. Now notice verse 11. The beast that was and is not is himself also the eighth. In other words, the Roman system is almost different, but it's actually part of the seven. The ten horns which you saw during World War II, when the sixth head was alive and well, five are falling, there's one that's alive right now. During World War II, when what's going on with Italy and Germany and the United States and Britain, all of that, and there was a struggle for world domination, that was a final revival of the Roman Empire, the last one, not the final one, the final one so far. It says, during the time of the kings, the king, during Italy and Nazi Germany, the ten horns which you saw are ten kings, which have received no kingdom as yet. So about the time of World War II, the ten kings hadn't come to power yet. They're going to be centered in Europe, are they not? Where all of these, where all of this is taking place? Is there a movement now to unite Europe for economic, political, and possibly religious reasons later? There certainly is. There certainly is. And it says here that there's going to be ten horns. A horn represents a king. They're going to, how long are they going to exist? Notice verse 12, the ten horns, which don't exist, haven't existed at the time of World War II, means they're going to exist sometime after that. Are we in some time period after World War II? Yes. The ten horns, which you saw, are ten kings who have received no kingdom as yet. But for 1 hour, they're going to be ruling with the last head. The beast is the seventh head. And the seventh head, the United States of Europe, which is the seventh head, is going to be made up of ten rulers symbolized by the ten horns. What does it say this head and this horns do? Verse 13. These are of one mind, and they will give their power and authority to the beast. They will make war with the lamb. You've read about the Battle of Armageddon? And there's a great plain right outside of Jerusalem called Armageddon, the plain of Megiddo. Many, many hundreds of square miles where armies can gather. You've heard of Jerusalem being surrounded by armies and other sermons. There's going to be a great war, brethren, at the very end. And the beast and the ten kings, which we consider to be the king of the north, for another sermon some other time. The king of the north is going to battle against the king of the south. And they're going to battle against, they're going to be battling in the environs of, in the environs of Jerusalem. And so that's what's going to happen. They will make war with the Lamb. What happens when Jesus Christ returns? Haven't you ever read in Zechariah 14? Where it talks about, in that day shall his feet stand on the Mount of Olives, and there's a great battle. And read Zechariah 14. And when Jesus Christ returns, there's going to be a great battle in Jerusalem. So what happens is this 10 kings, which are allied with the beast, the last ruler, some individual. So the beast can refer to an individual, the king of the of that power, or it can also refer to that nation. So when we talk about the end time beast, we mean two things. The king of that political system, and also the political system itself, the nation, the country. So there's coming a final head called the beast. And this beast is going to have 10 nations allied with him, or in conglomeration with him, or some kind of association. If I knew the answer to that, I wouldn't be here. I would be playing the stock market, because I would know what the future holds. But that's what the that's what's being told here, is that sometime in the future, five are fallen, one is, in the future another one's coming. 10 kings haven't existed yet, but when they do, they're going to give their power to that one king that's coming. And that one king that's coming, and the 10 kings that allied with him, are going to fight against Christ, and they're going to be destroyed by the coming of Christ. Notice verse 14. These, the seventh head with the 10 horns, these will make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them, for he is king, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and those who are with him are called, chosen, and faithful. Talks about the waters. Verse 16, let's go back to the 10 horns. And the 10 horns which you saw on the beast, these will hate the harlot. So the 10 horns are a political system. And they are going to turn against the great false church. Why this happens? We don't know. These will hate the great false church, the harlot, and make her desolate and naked, eat her flesh and burn her with fire. So they're going to destroy the great false church. And verse 17, for God has put into their hearts to fulfill his purpose. So somehow or another, God's going to change things so that the relationship between the great false church, the beast power, and the 10 kings that are allied with him, there's going to come a falling out. And they're going to, the political system is going to destroy the spiritual system. And that's going to happen sometime in the future. What happens to the woman and the beast? The woman is destroyed by the beast. And the beast, the king of the north, is destroyed by the coming Christ. And we can read about that, which we are going to, when we have our other sermon series. And we go back to the book of Daniel. We're going to see what happens to the king of the north. So let me overview what's going on in Revelation 17, brethren. In Revelation 17, we have a great false church. The great false church has martyred God's people. The great false church is a wealthy church arrayed in royal colors. The great false church is very wealthy. The great false church is a city, or is associated with a city. The great false church sits on in a geographic area with seven hills. So this is the great false church. Now, the great false church rides a beast. And the beast is represented by seven heads. The seven heads are a mountain or a hill. Isn't it interesting that the great false church physically sits on seven hills, and the great false church has politically ridden or sat on seven revivals that are coming? Five have come. One is, and one is to come. Those are seven right there. So the beast is the revivals of the Roman Empire that are dominated by the Catholic Church. Now, there have been revivals of the Roman Empire that have not been dominated by the Catholic Church. Do you remember in other places we read about, and I think in Revelation 13, there was 10 horns. Those are revivals. You remember in Daniel chapter 7, there was 10 horns, and three of them were cast down by the little horn. The little horn in Daniel chapter 7 and the little horn in Daniel chapter 8, you know, the four horns and one came up among them. Those little horns and the woman riding the beast are all the same system. They're all allied against God. There was some beast that had 10 horns, but only 7 of them were controlled. The other 3 were cast out, remember? So if you've got 10 and 3 are cast out, how many are left? 7. So some of the beasts, their horns are the same as the heads in Revelation 17. And you can see how that correlates in your chart there. But what I want you to notice is that Revelation 17, the beast is ridden or controlled by the woman. So these are the revivals of the Roman Empire that were controlled by the woman. Not all of them have been. Only 7 of them. And the 7 revivals, as I mentioned, were Justinian's Imperial Restoration, number 1. Kingdom controlled by Charles the Great, number 2. Kingdom of Otto the Great, the German head, number 3. Habsburg Dynasty, Charles the Fifth. The Napoleon's Kingdom, that's the 5th one. The 6th one that is was Italy, united by Garibaldi. They were allied with Nazi Germany. Nazis wanted to institute the Third Reich. Reich means rule or reign. They knew that there was the year 2000 coming, 1945, war and all of that, 1940s. And 35, 45, 50 years was going to be the third millennium. We have to cleanse all of this, the Nazis said, so that by the time the Third Reich or the third millennium comes, the world will be all German. So we have to do the dirty work, was what they said, so we can prepare everything for the Third Reich. That's what the Third Reich was. They were allied with Italy to do that. That was the 6th head that was crushed by the Allies in World War II, the American peoples and the British people. There is another resurrection of the Roman Empire coming that is going to be controlled by the church, by the great false church. It has been talked about in many places, including Daniel chapter 2, the 10 toes, and here in Revelation 17, the 10 horns. They are going to be alive and well when Jesus Christ returns. They're contemporaries of Christ. They're all alive at one time, and when Christ returns, he destroys them all. He also destroys the beast. Notice in Revelation chapter 19, verse 19, notice that. Jesus Christ returns in verse 11, you know, and all of those verses up there. Verse 16, he's King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Verse 17, then I saw an angel standing in the sun, and he cried with a loud voice, saying to all the birds that fly in the midst of heaven, come and gather together for the supper of the great God, that you may eat the flesh of kings, the flesh of captains, the flesh of mighty men, the flesh of horses, and of those who sit on them, and the flesh of all people, free and slave, both small and great. There's going to be a great war. Lots of dead. The angel is calling to all the vultures and the eagles to come get their fill. Verse 19, and I saw the beast. The beast is the seventh head. The ruler of the seventh head. The king of that particular revival. The others had kings. Napoleon, Otto the Great, Charles the Great, various other rulers, Justinian. I saw the beast, the kings of the earth, the 10 toes, the 10 horns, and their armies gathered to make war against him who sat on the horse and against his army. Then the beast was captured, and with him the false prophet. There's a false prophet coming, who worked signs in his presence by which he deceived those who received the mark of the beast and those who worshiped his image. You remember the mark of the beast? What was the mark of the beast? The mark of the beast was worshiping on the wrong day. The great false church has marked everybody with a false day of worship. These two were cast alive into the lake of fire burning with brimstone. What happens to the beast and the false prophet? Judgment is passed on them and they're cast into the lake of fire. The great false church rides the revivals of the Roman Empire. Since Justinian's imperial restoration, the false church has controlled Europe and large parts of the world. There is a coming revival of this system, where the false church riding and controlling it politically and spiritually. That's coming in the future. The coming Christ is going to destroy this system that's coming. Our next sermon will take an in-depth look at the last two chapters of the book of Daniel.